Hello and welcome to episode 156 of the Airplane Geeks podcast, the show where we talk aviation. I'm Dan Webb, and I'm joined by three co-hosts. First, Max Flight of 30,000 feet. Hi, Max.
Hi, Dan. You're doing pretty well so far.
Thank you. Next, we're joined by David Vanderhoof of What Just Flew By and The Hitchhiker's Guide to Military Aviation. Hello, David.
Wow, he did that better than you, Max. Oh, you're in trouble.
I can be replaced.
And then also the village idiot Rob Mark is here, but nobody cares. Our guest this week is Brian Lusk of Southwest Airlines, and he's the official corporate historian there. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. Does this mean I get my geek card validated?
Well, next week we can't arrange to give you an official Airplane Geeks pin.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Dan. Brian, can I just interrupt for 1 second? Dan, I thought you were going to do the intro.
I did. I just did the important high notes. So
I see.
So Rob's here from Jetline. Anyway, but yes, Brian, if anyone deserves an Airplane Geeks label, it is you. Brian is very well known from the official Nuts About Southwest blog. He's very great at his historical posts, and next week Southwest Airlines will have a big presence at Air Venture up in Oshkosh, so we'll be talking to him about that, and also he'll be sharing some airline history. I'm done doing the intro, and this felt really good, so yeah.
Well, I'm glad it was good for you.
Yeah, well, there's this warm feeling in my belly now.
Well, if we still have some listeners, let's just say that coming up we're going to talk about the aviation news from the past week. And then we're going to have a conversation with Brian about some history and what's going on now. And then David's got his This Week in Aviation. We have an Australia desk, an interesting one from Steve and Grant. That's followed by Peter Johnson's segment on European aviation. And we've got some listener mail, and I think we're going to talk a little weight and balance again. Let's get started with some aviation news. Our first story comes from Reuters. This is AMR in sale leaseback deal on up to 35 narrow bodies. And this article explains that American Airlines has done a deal with AerCap. That's an aircraft leasing company. That's a sale leaseback deal for financing on up to 35 Boeing 737-800s. I think this happens fairly frequently in the industry. Is this something significant going on with American?
Well, yeah, so a sale-leaseback transaction really isn't uncommon, and it's exactly as the name implies. An airline has some new deliveries coming in, and they want to finance those, so they'll just lease them back to a lessor, obviously, and they'll get the cash. So it's a great way to raise short-term capital. This is interesting for a couple reasons, though, on American's side. First, it covers up to 35 aircraft. 26 of them were previously ordered. But what's also interesting is that American has ordered three new 737-800s. Now, I'm going to flap a huge "This is Dan's random speculation" label on this. But there are a couple of other interesting things that I noticed. The most interesting is some slight semantics changes based on some American press releases. So previously, and I'm looking at an old American SEC filing from earlier this year. Well, actually, let me just break it down. So the new 737-800 delivery schedule, according to this press release from American, 15 aircraft in total this year, 28 800s in next year, and 14 in 2013. Now, what's interesting is, to quote from this old American SEC filing, quote, American had firm commitments for 11 737-800 aircraft and 7 Boeing 777-200 ER aircraft scheduled to be delivered in 2013 through 2016. Also, an older American press release from May said that there would be 11 737-800s beginning in 2013, while there are now 14 in 2013. So there's at least been an increase in orders in 2013, But based on these changes in semantics, it seems that there's there could be some kind of acceleration in deliveries on American side, but I'm just speculating here. This kind of deal is not really that new, but I mean, American did a similar deal with GECAS in 2009 for some 737-800 deliveries last year and this year for about $1.6 billion. So,
are you going to take a breath?
I am. Okay. But I was hearing my
so but, Dan, yes, I have sir. A question. Do you is this not necessarily part of the big secret order that Americans kind of had going in the wings? I mean, this is sort of an old thing just kind of coming to fruition, right?
Well, there's definitely been a lot of speculation since Paris. There have been some media reports about American being in talks with Airbus for an order of aircraft. I don't know why I just specify of aircraft as opposed to an order of fries, but I digress. Anyway.
I get that. French fries. Yes. Okay.
I really don't think there's anything that this deal is related. I mean, I think this is just more American wants to raise money. I mean, especially the fact that the bulk of the aircraft involved in this deal are the 26 of the 35 were previously ordered, three new orders, and the rest are purchase rights for aircraft that would be delivered in the 2013-2014 timeframe. So I don't think there's a whole lot. If anything, I really don't think there's much that's related to any potential narrow-body order from America.
Okay.
Because there really is an awful lot of speculation out there.
Yeah, there have been some great media reports, and we will have to wait and see if any of the speculation comes true.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Brian, can I just make a note? Because I know you're – did we mention that Brian from Southwest is here, right? Didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Brian, do you know if you hired Dan and got him a job at Southwest, he wouldn't be able to be on this show anymore, would he?
Oh, God.
Depends what he's doing. So,
so what job would you be able to hire him for that he wouldn't need that show anymore for?
Well, my fear is that sooner or later he'll be CEO and I'll be working for him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's good. All of our fears.
I just wanted to check. Okay.
Okay.
Though actually, speaking of 737-800, Southwest has some coming next year. So, look at that.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
All right. Well, let's take a look at our next story. This one comes from the New York Times. Delta cuts number of flights to small cities in Midwest. And Delta's announced that it's reducing some flights. These are to small cities in the Midwest U.S. And I think it's the article mentions 24 small cities in a variety of states. And it's mostly associated with Delta's 34-seat Saab turboprops, which it's phasing out by the end of this year. This is a tough thing, especially if you're in one of those small cities. I mean, these passengers in those kind of locations depend on, air service.
Well, this is interesting. I think the phrase cut has been thrown around a little bit, but I don't think that's exactly the best word at this point. I have like a scorecard, if you will, of these cities.
Yeah,
and there's this formula. Well, just checking, and then this is my Excel formula isn't working. Give me a second.
Give us a few for instances, like cities.
Oh, so some instances, and these include Butte, Montana, Waterloo, Iowa, Hebbing, Minnesota.
That's Butte.
Oh, Butte,
Butte
Montana.
Montana.
Waterloo,
wow.
Iowa.
Okay.
That's why you're the butt of our jokes.
Oh, God. Anyway.
That joke was a Butte.
Wow.
We couldn't have planned
right,
that any
David.
Better.
Wow, that was...
Is Brian still here?
I doubt it.
Okay, I just wanted to check. I thought he might have hung up.
That was really bad.
Sorry.
All right, Dan.
Anyway, so what's interesting is some of these small cities are covered under the EAS program. So some are not. So the EAS program, it stands for Essential Air Service, and basically was a response to the airline industry being deregulated. So basically that these small communities, now that the airlines had complete freedom on choosing their routes, they would have a guaranteed level of service. So this program basically subsidizes, the government basically pays the airline to help guarantee a certain level of financial performance. So So what's interesting here is that on some of the cities, actually, most of these cities are served all by either Misaba, which is a legacy Northwest subsidiary, or Pinnacle Airlines. And Misaba and Pinnacle are now owned by the same holding company. So there's a lot of service operated by Misaba Saabs, and that fleet has decreased by over in Delta service have decreased by over 20 aircraft over the past couple of years. And there's also some Misaba and Pinnacle CRJs mixed in there. And also there's one city, Butte, Montana, that's operated by SkyWest. Now, what's interesting is that some of these cities just are small cities, and Delta provides service unsubsidized. So what could happen here if Delta is providing this 90-day notice to the DOT saying, we intend to terminate service? They've also put in Pinnacle and Misaba have also put in a line saying, we intend to bid on an EAS contract. So they're looking for a subsidy to maintain service on some of these routes. And also for some of the cities, the filings from Pinnacle and Misaba indicate that Great Lakes Airlines, which operates mainly Beach 1900s, is interested in serving these cities, which would be perhaps be a better fit than the Saab 340s. So it's just interesting, but it's just part of Delta has been really realigning their fleet, getting rid of some of the inefficient aircraft, like the smaller regional aircraft. So this is just part of those changes. But what's also interesting here from a big picture perspective is the EAS program has been a nice area of criticism for politicians, especially in an area where reducing the deficit and the national debt have become very important political topics. This has become this has been a program that has been, you know, criticized as wasteful.
But let's be serious. I mean, how much money are we actually talking about for EAS? It's not a huge amount every year.
You know, I don't know the exact number. I think I saw a couple hundred million somewhere last week.
Oh, I didn't even think it was that much, but maybe.
So, I mean, granted, Delta actually provided load factors on some of these routes to say, you know, how they even mentioned the press release, you know, we've operated empty flights. And I think the lowest was Thief River Falls, Minnesota, with a load factor of 12%. So really not that great. And actually, half the cities that Delta is targeting here have a load factor below 50%. So even if it's a small amount of money, Rob, it just has been criticized in the past. So it's just will be very interesting to see how this goes with potentially some more communities being added to the EAS program, which has already been criticized.
You know, as late as the mid 90s, but I know Butte was a mainline Delta station. So that's kind of interesting there. And also, one of the arguments you hear about another government program, which is Amtrak, is that especially those small cities along the Canadian border, like in Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and some of those, the reason to keep the empire builders because of lack of common carrier service up there.
But by the way, I know this is random, but since Brian brought it up, can I say that Amtrak has like totally awesome train names? Like either Empire Builder or Silver Star, like just really cool stuff.
Well, Amtrak had nothing to do with those. You have to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dan, there was these railroads called the Pennsylvania and the Santa Fe.
Yeah, well, I realize that, but Amtrak could have been dumb and gotten rid of the names.
Yeah, and they have on some of the short-haul routes up in the Northeast that they had named trains, and they just dropped them for Acela Regional and Acela. They don't carry individual names where they used to. So,
well, don't some airlines name their planes, or is that gone now?
Yes, actually, I know Brian will have to correct me, but I believe Southwest has a few named aircraft. And then,
are you talking aircraft or flights?
Well, yeah, aircraft. There aren't that many named routes, if any. I guess maybe the Northeast shuttles, but I really can't think of any others at this point.
Well, they used to name individual flight numbers, like in the 50s, Connell had interchange flight. I know they had specific names, and Pan Am had the Presidential Rainbow and some of those, but that kind of went out with the coming of the 707.
In terms of named aircraft, I know Southwest has a few. And then actually JetBlue and Virgin America, I think every aircraft has some kind of witty title. And I think Virgin America actually first airplane to have a title that is a Twitter hashtag. I forget what the hashtag is at this point, but they do have one.
No kidding. Wow.
And British Airways has named all their airplanes are named too.
Yeah, it's kind of a classy sort of thing to do.
Don't forget KLM and Qantas.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, but by the way, Brian, since you're an airline history buff, am I the only one that misses the BA World Tales, or am I alone here?
I miss the livery before that. I forget what it was called, the one with the half the Union Jack on the tail. That's the one I miss.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, BA, didn't they have like a 7-5 that was painted in that livery as they were retiring that fleet, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, for its last flight, they flew in that livery.
I liked them when they were BOAC myself.
Yeah.
That goes back.
And BEA.
Well, isn't...
That's right, BEA. I forgot about BEA, yeah.
The B-line.
But isn't BOAC, isn't that where the Speedbird call sign came from BOAC?
Yes. Yeah, because when they were BOAC, they were definitely Speedbird.
All right, well, why don't we give Dan a little bit of a rest and talk some business aviation. We've got a story from the Wichita Eagle. This is Cessna talking with Chinese company about developing business jet. And the article says that Cessna Aircraft is in talks with AVIC, the Aviation Industry Corporation of China, on some kind of a business jet collaboration. They say that the discussions are exploratory. That's what they're calling them, exploratory at this point. Talking about preliminary talks around joining, designing, and producing the jets. So this is kind of interesting because, you know, the Chinese have been in our aviation news items for several months now. And the business aviation, I think, is a sector that the Chinese would really like to develop. And we're starting to see some more signs of that. So I don't know. Does this portend more link-ups with American business jet and general aviation companies, do you think?
It's interesting. I agree with you. I think the Chinese would like a business jet. To be honest, though, this is not just about Cessna. The Chinese Aviation Authority led an RFP, actually, some time back. So it's not just Cessna, but Cessna, Bombardier, Gulfstream, Hawker Beach.
Hawker Beechcraft, yeah.
They have all basically responded to this inquiry by the Chinese as to whether they might be able to work together or not. I'm a little surprised at this, actually, because if I were the Cessna folks or the Hawker Beechcraft folks or any of them, I think I'd be wondering how long we might have a shared factory somewhere in China before the Chinese basically come in and say, okay, well, we've worked with you guys for 5 years or 8 years or whatever, and thanks, but we don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
And that is certainly what has happened in other parts of other industries. But of course, too, the business aviation sector here in the States is not doing real well.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. I think that's probably the Chinese end game is to develop their own, you know, indigenous capabilities. And I mean, we're seeing that with the Comac C919 jet, for example, in the larger market. But, you know, it's kind of tough, like you say, if American GA companies and business aviation companies are hurting and could use some infusions of cash, I think they're going to, you know, I mean, there's a possibility that they're going to, you know, enter into some agreements that maybe they wouldn't if they had a longer term view and if their financial position was a little sounder.
It's a very interesting point because, of course, Cessna already has a relationship I believe it's Shenyang. I'm not good with the Chinese names. I don't want to be the butt of someone's joke. But because the Skycatchers are built over there, and
you're
of
right.
course Cessna took a lot of heat 5 years ago.
Yes, they did.
Maybe not quite that many years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when they agreed to partner up with the Chinese to build the Skycatcher. So again, for the Cessna folks, this probably doesn't seem that big a stretch, but for other organizations, I think it does, especially in light of the fact that they just bought Cirrus. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Are there Skycatchers rolling off Chinese assembly lines now?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I believe Skycatcher delivery numbers are up above the 200 number right now. And there were, last time I checked, probably over 1,000 orders for that airplane. But they come to Cessna in Wichita in a box. So it's like putting together a model.
Oh, Wichita does the final assembly?
Yeah, the Yingling Brothers folks at right at Wichita Mid-Continent Airport gets the crates and takes all the bits and pieces out. And in fact, I'll send you – I've got a couple of photos that I took when I was down there last month. I'll put those – I'll send those to you. We can put them up on the site in case anybody wonders what the Skycatcher looks like when it comes out of the box before they build it.
Oh, that'd be cool. Have there been any issues with those Skycatchers?
No, actually none at all. I mean, they had those – early issues in terms of aircraft controllability during flight testing, but of course that was a flight test issue, and they kind of broke one slightly. But they put a fin underneath the back end of the vertical stabilizer, and it's been just fine. And I've flown the airplane a number of times, and I really like it. I mean, I wish I had one. I mean, they're really nice airplanes.
Okay, we've got another story also out of Wichita. Actually, this is from the Wichita Business Journal. Pompeo, he wants Obama to see general aviation industry for himself. And I guess this comes as a response to some comments from the U.S. president recently that were not well received, let's say, by the business aviation community. Rob, I think, I guess Obama had made some comments about removing some tax breaks that I guess has to do with the accelerated depreciation for business jets. Maybe that's what... the implication is, are you following the story?
Yeah, that's not the first time they've tried that. But I think what is also coming out of this discussion is that there's been so much heat from the business aviation industry about the president's language that now another issue has popped back onto the radar that we were not expecting, which is user fees. That user fees could indeed be the way that the industry or that the government may decide is the way to fund the system. And, of course, no, they want that even less. But sure. I think the big issue really is the fact that I don't think anybody believes that the president has a clue about anything other than the airlines. I mean, I'm sure he knows who Gary Kelly is from Southwest, but anybody in Wichita, I don't know if he even knows where Wichita is.
Welcome to the Political Geeks Podcast. I'm Dan Webb. actually, here's how I view this issue. Had President Obama just come out and said, we're in a time where we need to address our fiscal deficit and reduce our national debt, and one way we can do that is by getting rid of this accelerated depreciation. And if he just said that, I think NBAA would still be against it. It'd be the same thing. But the issue was that the president specifically made the conversation about business aviation.
But, you know, I think it's more than that, Dan. I think the president made it very clear by his statements, and that were certainly not countermanded by his DOT secretary, who's not exactly my favorite DOT secretary. Okay, I'm not going to say that, sorry, even though he's from Illinois. But you know what? I don't think the White House has any idea how many hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of airplanes are exported every year out of, you know, to other countries. Mm. Tell me an industry, short of Boeing, that exports tons and tons of U.S. products these days. Not many. And these guys didn't even realize that they were stepping on that particular issue. Yeah. They saw it as a tax loophole issue.
I think it honestly can be viewed as a tax loophole issue. And I think there could be a serious discussion about tax policy and how we address the budget deficit. But I think it's less the fact – I'm not sure how ignorant – the politicians are. I just think corporate jets are an easy political target when we're a little bit over a year away from an election season.
Oh, I agree.
I think that's more driving it than anything.
I agree. And as I said to one of our local legislators, listen, you know what? I don't have a problem with reviewing the tax codes. I don't. But don't do it in the press. Now, you know, if the White House had been smart enough to understand the export issue and had gone to some people in the industry, GAMA, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, and said, look, guys, we got to figure out a way to kind of close this budget loophole. And we're thinking about this. And they, of course, they would have still been against it. But they've also given the White House some ammunition, which is, you know, we send a lot of our products outside the country. And he would have said, oh, yeah, you know, that's an interesting point. Well, let's redo that. But not you don't legislate tax policy in the media. That's a stupid thing to do.
Well, I think you could. And then also the other thing is, as far as I know, that this specific issue is an IRS tax issue that would, if anything, more affects domestic corporations. Just to be fair.
That is true. Yes.
But no, I either way, I think, you know, if we want to dork out and talk about accelerated depreciation, we can. I think it's a fair point. I just don't think the administration should be targeting corporate and business aviation like they are.
Wait a minute. Did Dan just do a flip flop?
No. Here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. If you want to talk about accelerated depreciation, that's fine, and that affects many purchases of business equipment.
It's more just the focus
of the conversation about accelerated depreciation has shifted to business aviation, which is unfair.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. Now I'm with Dan.
Did you not label me a flip flopper, sir?
Come on,
sir.
Okay, I was going to say something, but I realize no politics. Sorry, I know the listeners will get on us.
That's right.
Sorry, Max. Okay, I'm done.
All right, we have a story from our buddy at the TSA. That's Blogger Bob from the TSA blog. Yeah. I don't know what episode that was we had him on. It was quite a while ago. We're probably due to try again. But he has got a post in the TSA blog. This is Known Traveler Passenger Screening Pilot. And Blogger Bob says, in the last several months, you've heard us talking about applying more risk-based screening procedures to our security checkpoints based on the latest intelligence. Well, the time has come, and in the fall, we will begin a passenger screening pilot for a select group of travelers who volunteer more information about themselves. So there have been different kind of flavors of, you know, frequent flyer programs and things like that. But this is one, I guess, where, you know, if you give more information to the TSA that they can keep on file in a way for them to recognize that it's you, then they don't need to subject you to as much of the screening process as they would otherwise. So sounds like a good idea, right?
Well, honestly, the whole idea of a trusted traveler program has been tossed around for the now almost the past 10 years. And really, there hasn't been much progress. We did have the CLEAR program for a while, but basically you gave up more of your personal information, but basically it just became a priority line. You went through the exact same screening as everybody else. And it was basically essentially, I think there was a little bit more customer service, but basically kind of what you would get if you were an elite frequent flyer with an airline anyway.
Yeah.
So this program seems to be different. I don't have all the details yet, but basically if you give up some information, you'll eventually be subjected to a slightly different, hopefully less intrusive method of screening. So this pilot is being rolled out to a couple of groups of travelers. So right now for Delta travelers in Detroit and Detroit and Atlanta, there are some frequent flyers there, as well as Dallas, Fort Worth, and Miami for American. It'll roll out to other airlines such as United, Southwest, JetBlue, U.S. Airways, Alaska, and Hawaiian in the future. And also at those airports, it also includes the Customs and Border Protection Agency has already had some trusted traveler programs such as Global Entry, to help going through customs. So apparently some travelers in those groups will be selected as well. So after 10 years, maybe we might actually see some progress in this area. Shocker.
And the big difference to me in this program is, I mean, this is run by the government, by the TSA, whereas the CLEAR program previously, that was run by outside companies, commercial.
Yeah, it was. Right? And I honestly don't remember the whole history on how CLEAR didn't end up what it was supposed to be. And honestly, the expert on that is our good friend, Aunt Benet, who I'm sure will leave a voicemail into this about this topic. Otherwise, I will be very disappointed.
Yeah, but you know, I'd be curious, Brian. Have you heard anything about the next version of a trusted traveler program around Southwest at all?
No. Are you talking about this version or the one?
Well, any version. I don't know. They keep changing, but.
Well, I know initially that the correspondence we put out after September 11th, when we would get letters from people complaining about the process, was that we hoped that they would go to some form of trusted traveler. I'm not sure that this is that form that we were looking for. To be honest, I mean, I'm not too very involved in the airport security process, so I don't know. But long answer to the question is no, I haven't heard of any discussion on the a newer program, at least it hasn't made it to me at my level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there have been a lot of details yet, but I mean, hopefully this is because I mean, honestly, it kind of gets annoying having to take your shoes off and take out your liquids and do the body scan and whatever. So hopefully this will, for some trusted travelers, reduce the security screening time and hopefully lead to an easier experience for everybody.
Yeah, we can hope.
Yeah, we will see. Obviously, with things like this, I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay, I'm going to jump in and disagree. This is not going to help the frequent flyers anymore. It's not going to help the backlog anymore because the people who are going to be subject to all the secondary screening are most likely the ones who aren't flying all the time. The ones that do know that when they get up to the line to take off their shoes and put their laptop in a separate container and all of the other rules. They know how to play the game. It's everybody else who are heading with their family to Disney World that caused the line to back up.
Well, that's true. And honestly, this is probably more of an issue of how the checkpoints are designed and how they're staffed. But you would think that all other things being equal, if at least one portion of the travelers are moving faster, that would lead towards faster times for everybody.
See, yes, I think the solution is that in the, you know, right now they have these signs at the security points that say, you know, experienced traveler, this, I don't know, there's about four different categories. I think they should consider changing it to get it, don't get it, and just get in that line.
Well, yeah, I mean.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, see?
I do like that splitting up because there are some people that do. Well, I like the way it's split up now because, I mean, there are some people who get it, but if obviously you're traveling with like a baby or something, you might know the rules, but it's just going to take longer. So, and there are some people who, despite having a lot of the same policies for the past 5-6 years, still do not know that, you know, you got to take your shoes off or laptop out. I mean, there are a lot of rules, but you would think that, you know, something would have gone through by now.
You get a T-shirt that says "I got it."
Yeah, see.
Yeah,
or you could wear a hat that says "Got it." Got, and the people that have the hat that says "Got what," you know they're bad.
As Dan mentioned at the beginning of the show, our guest is Brian Lusk, the corporate historian for Southwest Airlines. Brian, again, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's my kind of people.
You've got quite a history with the airline industry. You worked with Delta for a number of years and now Southwest for a number of years. And you've had some different positions in those companies. And currently, tell us about, you know, what you're doing at Southwest. We, of course, see you as one of the bloggers at Nuts About Southwest.
Yeah, and I'll still be doing that even with my new title. I'll still be doing the probably more the historical stuff like Flashback Fridays, which is the look back at Southwest history that we do on every Friday. Well, obviously, that's why it's Flashback Friday. I'm also working. We have a fairly large permanent exhibit at the Frontiers of Flight Museum here in Dallas, and we recently installed N300SW, which is the Spirit of Kitty Hawk. It's the first 737-300 intercommercial service. So we preserved that and turned it into part of the display. It's a cool, we've got a display that's really unique and that the nose of the airplane is inside the museum and the tail is sticking out where it kind of extends the building. It's along two busy streets here in Dallas, Mockingbird and Lemon, and police departments had several calls like, what happened to that airplane? So we've got about 3,800 square feet inside besides the airplane. So we put a lot of our historical artifacts over there, some of Herb Kelleher and Colleen Barrett's personal collections, including one of the Harleys that the pilot union gave Herb. So we have that over there. And then another behind-the-scenes, not-so-glamorous thing is we are in the process of digitizing all of our photos and videos from the last 40 years and trying to catalog them. So,
how long do you think that'll take you?
We've been told by the company that's digitizing them, they'll probably have that part done within 6 months or so. But the cataloging and the digital asset management, I'm learning all these new terms in this new job. So that's going to be the bear is identifying a lot of this stuff because I've got one big box of negatives on my desk that came from our original advertising agency, the Bloom Agency. And for the first 10 years, they pretty much were did all the photography, all the public relations. They supplied the in-flight magazine. It was called the Southwest Airlines Magazine, real original title. And so it's really the history, operational history of Southwest for 10 years, but there's very little organization and very little identification. So a lot of the stuff in Flashback Fridays comes from those. And through that, the employees seeing things and responding and able to identify it.
Well, Brian, after all that material is digitized, what will Southwest do with that?
We'll make it available. We get a lot of requests now for research. I think the past 2 or 3 months, I don't know if you've seen CNBC's Titans on Herb Kelleher. It was on Thursday night. We supplied a lot of the still photos for that. We've had everything from the Glamour in UK wanting pictures of flight attendants in hot pants to several other companies. So we get a lot of requests for historical stuff, both externally and internally.
Do you guys have any bottles of wild turkey?
We had done a time capsule in our 20th anniversary. And we just opened it now that we're in the middle of our 40th anniversary. And there were 3 bottles of wild turkey in there that employees had put in there. It was interesting. There was also the most unique thing that somebody put in there was a bottle of liquid paper. Now, whoever put that in there must have known that nobody would be typing 20 years from now.
Oh, yeah. Dan, you probably don't use that stuff on your term papers anymore.
No, I did use it in elementary school, not for typewriter stuff, but for like homework and stuff. But yeah, I think I actually liked playing with my parents' typewriter when I was like 6.
Wow.
You know, when I started with Delta, speaking of typewriters, our computer terminals were IBM Selectric sets. You would type in the customer's, the customer information. And you would wait, and then the little ball would come back and print out.
Oh, yes.
What was in the reservation.
We've come quite a long ways.
Yeah, and that's only since 76, so.
You know, Brian, it occurs to me, it's interesting that, maintaining the historical record, let's say, of any kind of corporation, I mean, that costs money. And, sometimes that can be one of the one of the budget items that kind of that gets cut when times are tough. At Southwest, are you getting the sort of the support that you think you need?
Yeah, I mean it's really amazing. My boss Linda Rutherford, who's our vice president of communication and strategic outreach, is a real firm proponent for what I'm doing, and really it fits into our culture because our whole culture is based on what the people before us have done. So it really ties in well there. I mean, if you've walked through our headquarters, I know Dan has, and has seen all this stuff on the wall. The history plays a huge part of our corporation. It's just no one has taken the time to kind of organize it. I mean, it's always, for the first 40 years, we were taking photos and doing stuff of the things we were doing at the time, but no real way to put it back into context.
Yeah, well, that's great. It's because you don't want to lose that historical record, certainly, and it's, you know, easy for the records and the artifacts to find their way into the trash or the, you know, the back lot, and they're kind of gone forever.
I'm sorry.
No, Brian, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's not just Southwest. To give some credit to my former employer, Delta, and they've been very helpful with us as we've set up this museum. They're one of the airlines that have really tried to preserve their history. They've started actually about the same time we did, about their 40th anniversary, and trying to collect it and bring stuff back into the company. And as they merged and gone through with Northwest and with Western, and to bring that material into one place. And then I know my father worked for Connell for 35 years.
Yeah.
And about in 1990, I wanted to do a history of Pioneer Airlines. I wrote it for the original airliner magazine, and I contacted them, and they had nothing. They flat out told me, we don't have any material on a key component of their company. So it really varies in the industry.
I actually had the chance to go to the Delta Museum.
Oh, did you?
In December. Amazing. It's really, really impressive to see what they've done. And I don't think it's really open to the public all that often, but it's just awesome. But
do they have limited hours? Is that what you're saying?
You know, I don't know, because I know it's like the I forget. It's hope. I know they have like a big aviation memorabilia show that they host every now and then, but I think mainly it's mostly open for employees of Delta or employees of airlines that Delta merged with over the course of its history. You can find out more. The website is deltamuseum.org, and they have a really great website with historical stuff. So just check it out. And my favorite mug actually is sold on there, which is, I love the smell of jet fuel in the morning. But Brian,
Yeah. Obviously
you do some really great stuff with Southwest, but since you're an airplane dork yourself, what great memorabilia do you have personally?
I was really fortunate that when I was a kid, my dad would bring home, it's amazing the kind of stuff that other airlines would send around the industry, like advertisements and stuff. But my dad was fortunate enough to have a dad that would bring stuff home from work, and I kept most of it. Probably one of my coolest things I have is the Connell route map from the old Fort Worth Airport, Eamon Carter Field. When they tore it down, my dad brought that back home for me. So that's probably pride of place. And then I've been collecting timetables. He would bring home airline timetables, and I've expanded that. So I've got a fairly good collection during the 50s.
Wow.
Few in the 40s.
How many timetables do you have, Brian?
I've never counted. Probably several thousand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So is it a fair thing to say, Brian, that when you're an historian for an airline, you're pretty much an airplane geek by default?
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. Airline geek. You have to be a history buff to really understand it, I think. there's a lot that I think you have to relate to, like a Southwest event. You have to. It helps if you know what was going on in the industry at the same time, so you can either that old thing from college. Dan's probably run into this, compare and contrast and pay attention to. It helps you do that.
Have you found anything really interesting, kind of unique in your travels around the historical part of Southwest? Anything really wild that you never expected to find?
Let me say the one thing I haven't found are pictures of our first flight. I've talked to people, and I think they were just so glad to get it into the air that there aren't any pictures, and there's, as far as I can see, there wasn't a lot of news coverage. Having said that, though, I just recently found photos of Southwest. They were taken at Amon Carter Field inside the old American hangar there of the FAA evacuation drill before we could start to fly. They have a picture of the airplane with all the windows blacked out and all the people wearing numbers and the aftermath of the drill. So that's a pretty cool thing to find.
Did you find pairs of hot pants laying around?
We've got some that have, not from that, but I mean, we have some mannequins that have hot pants. Some of them, sad to say, are reproductions at this point. Some of the uniforms are still originals. And the boots, we've got the boots. And
Herb Kelleher never wore any of that, right?
No. Not that we know about.
No.
Brian, Southwest is going to have some kind of a presence at AirVenture this year, I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, we're going to be there in several different ways. We are going to be at the Kids Venture. We're going to have a booth over there with some of our pilots the entire week for the kids that are there.
Oh, that's great. So the kids can talk to the pilots and ask them questions and things?
Yeah. And so we'll have it staffed from Monday through Sunday. We're also going to be sponsoring the Welcome Center just off of the Phillips Conoco Square. They'll have Southwest branding, Southwest charging stations, ticket counter. And that's kind of the meeting place for a lot of people go there to meet each other, just get out of the sun. So we'll have that the entire 7 days.
Right.
It's kind of exciting. We're doing an honor flight on Wednesday. We'll be flying World War II veterans, primarily Navy veterans, to go along with the 100th anniversary. We're going to fly them to Baltimore, and then they'll bus them to the World War II monument, and then their flight will get back at 6 p.m. just at the end of the big naval air show. That'll be the last the arrival of our airplane. We'll close that air show, and then they'll come out to a hero's greeting, and we'll have a little event there. So we're doing that. We're bringing back our static display airplane on the last Saturday of the show. I think it's the 30th, and then we're a sponsor of. It's Southwest Super Saturday, so we'll have a VIP tent for the evening air show, and we'll be there until the end of the night there. Our airplane will go back, but a lot of us will still be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, got a pretty full plate there this year.
So will it be pretty useful to us if Dan and I show up and we have our Rapid Rewards number on our hats or something?
Well, what do you want?
Yeah. I want to see Dan in the hot pants. I think that'd be pretty cool.
No, let's not go there.
I'll bring a camera.
That would be cool.
We can put him in the Spirit Junior, which is that airplane that you stand in and walk around in.
Yeah, but we have pictures of that already.
Yeah, that already happened.
Oh, okay.
We ought to find that picture. That was from, 2 years ago or something, Dan?
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, it's easy to find.
It's up on, just Google Dan Webb in...
No, just look me up on the Facebook and you'll find me.
Okay.
Brian, have you been to Oshkosh before, or will this be your first time?
This is my third time.
Third time.
Yeah, I was there last year. We just did the static airplane last year, and then in early 90s, I forget which year, I was still with Delta. A bunch of us flew up there, and we didn't even have a hotel. We just took sleeping bags and slept in the parking lot.
Wow.
Spent the night up there and went to the show, so that was pretty cool.
Now, Brian, I think last year was Southwest's first of the show. So where did the idea come from to attend AirVenture in the first place?
I guess I'm kind of guilty for that. We had opened the Milwaukee station. We were looking for ways to support the station, and I suggested, why don't we look at Oshkosh? And then, so last year I contacted them to see what Jeff Kaufman at the EAA to see what the sponsorship requirements and information, and we got that. And we were a little late last year, so we really only did just the one thing. But this year, Milwaukee's taking on a bigger emphasis with the AirTran merger. It'll be a fairly large combined city, so, and an important city. So we've got a lot of the marketing stuff going on.
Do you have any advice for first-time AirVenture goers?
Yeah, I would think I would look at their website ahead of time and try and get a game plan, look at kind of stuff that interests you most and kind of try to see all you can for that. I mean, there's just so much stuff. If the other advice is to spend more than one day so you can see a lot more.
Hmm.
If you can spend more than one day, you can kind of concentrate on areas, because last year I just barely made it down to the warbirds, and that's always an interest of mine, that and aviation, commercial aviation from the 50s, 40s and 50s, a big interest, so I always try and look at everything like that.
Yep.
And like the first year I went was Kermit Weeks had his Sunderland there, and managed to take the tour of that, and that was probably the high point of that. Oshkosh was going out on the Lake Winnebago and climbing aboard the Sunderland. It was like going back 40 years in time. So
are you going to get some personal time this year, or is it going to be all business for you?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have some personal time. We'll actually be staying in Oshkosh. Part of us are renting a house there. So,
oh, great.
So that should help.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Is there anything else going on at Southwest Airlines these days that you wanted to talk about or tell our listeners about?
Oh, gosh. It seems like everything's going on. I mean, we've got the merger that's progressing. We've got the museum. We've got our social media. We're really expanding there. One kind of exciting thing we're doing is we're taking I've got representatives from customer relations that are now going out, and they're monitoring sites like Flyer Talk and airliners.net, which is, I had been doing all of that, but the cool thing that they can do it is they've got all the tools where they can actually help customers on the spot, where I would have to get information and contact somebody and have them help me. So I think that's a really exciting thing that we're doing out of our department.
Yeah, that's really significant. I think that Southwest kind of has a reputation for being a little more with it when it comes to social media. But, I mean, that's a great example of you know, that in action and using social media, you know, to the advantage of, well, I mean, not only the company, but your customers as well.
Right, and you're right about the tradition. I mean, we've been online with, like, a blog is in its sixth year, so it kind of just came organic. I mean, it's part of the openness online as part of the general tone of the company and the culture of the company. So it's really a good fit, the transparency that social media has. And with Christy McNeil has really done a good job in tying all the different areas together.
Do you have a lot of creative control with the blog, or do you have to get approval for every post and every mention?
No, we do have a lot of approval. We have a kind of an in-house proofreading team that will just make sure there aren't any errors in it. But I would say probably 80% of the material there doesn't need any higher checking. There's times where we may need to go to another department or legal or something like that, just to make sure if it's in the middle of certain kinds of crisis that we might be limited on what we can say. But for the most part, we have control, and that's pretty amazing.
Brian, I have a question for you. Every time I see some kind of a cool video about the social media group at Southwest, in fact, I saw some from South by Southwest not long ago, it's always a lady that's on there. Are you sort of the token guy in that group?
It's probably Christy. She's a lot more photogenic than I am and a lot more active into all the different channels than I am. I'm not very photogenic, especially when it comes to videos. So if I see the video camera, I usually run and hide.
Well, and that's why this is an audio podcast, not a video podcast.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. So why don't you give our listeners some of the key places they can find Southwest Airlines online?
Okay. Our blog is at www.blogsouthwest.com. If you forget that, you can go southwest.com and there's a link back to it. But our own link is blogsouthwest.com. Our Twitter handle is at Southwest Air. And we're on Facebook under Southwest Airlines.
Right.
My personal Twitter handle is Blogboy. I'm kind of proud of that. I've had it for a long time.
Wow, good for you. You must have had it for a long time to get a name like that. Good for you.
Yeah, so I can be reached there. And I'm also under my name, Brian Lusk, on Facebook. I've got a page there, too, so.
Okay, good. And we'll have all those in the show notes. So if people didn't catch those, they can check the show notes and we'll have all those listed. All right, very good. Brian, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Our pleasure. All right, take care. And all the other guys, except for me, will keep an eye out for you at AirVenture.
Okay, I'll see you. Thanks.
Oh, you're not coming, are you, Max?
Not this year. I won't be able to make it this year, so unfortunately. All right, Brian. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
See you, Brian.
Bye.
And now with This Week in Aviation, here's David Vanderhoof, the official Airplane Geeks historian.
Thanks, Max. Hi, guys. Welcome to This Week in Aviation, Volume 3, Episode 19, July 17th through the 23rd. July 17th, 1980, Cathay Pacific, using their new 747-200Bs, begin flying Hong Kong to London flights. July 18th and 19th, 1984, Captain Lynn Ripplemeyer becomes the first woman to captain a 747 from Newark, New Jersey to Gatwick. And on the same day, Captain Beverly Lynn Burns captains a 747 flight from Newark, New Jersey to LAX. Both flew for People Express. Both captains later had careers with Continental Airlines. It's also interesting to note that both started as flight attendants, then worked their way up through and into the cockpit. July 19th, 1957, Operation Plum Bob. A Northrop F-89J Scorpion launches an AR-2 Genie, or MB, otherwise known as an MB-1. The pilot in the command is Captain Eric William Hutchinson, and his RIO, or instrument officer, is Captain Alfred C. Barbie. Under this test, there were 5 volunteers to prove the use of the missile was safe over populated areas. The test was flown at Yucca Flats, Nevada. What made this missile test different was the warhead. The Genie was an unguided rocket equipped with a 1.5 kiloton nuclear warhead. This would be the only live test of the missile. The warhead was exploded approximately 15,000 feet over the 5 volunteers. The Genie flew with the Royal Canadian Air Force and United States Air Force and were finally retired in 1985. Its mission was to blow up bomber streams, not just the bombers. As the Russian bears were coming over the North Pole, the F-89J would launch not one, but 2 of these to blow up the center of the formations, taking out multiple bombers and possibly the F-89 as well. July 20th, 1969, the Grumman Lunar Excursion Module Eagle lands on the Sea of Tranquility. While there are constant disputes about if we did or did not land on the moon, Neil Armstrong did walk on the moon, and Grant, you see, there are at least some photographs to argue over. Oh, and it's a significant day in my life. If you ever meet me in person, ask me and I'll tell you the story why. First flights that occurred during the week of July 17th through the 20th. The Northrop ATB, eventually it became known as the B-2A Spirit stealth bomber, July 17th, 1989. And the Fiat Lockheed Martin G-222 or C-27 Spartan, Grant's favorite airplane to watch do barrel rolls, July 18th, 1970. And that's the way it was, July 17th through the 20th. This is David M. Vanderhoof, the Airplane Geeks historian, signing out. Next week, we'll be broadcasting live from Oshkosh.
Wow. Thanks, David.
And, By the way, I know the secret of the moon landing story David wants people to ask about. I know the secret. I know this.
By the way, David, were you implying that our one of our friends from down under is a moon landing denier?
No, Dan, but if you've been following over the last 2 years, Grant and I have been going around in circles about a certain aviator in New Zealand who flew approximately a year and a half ahead of the Wright brothers, but didn't take any pictures.
Right.
Oh, okay. Just wondering.
No evidence, no history.
Right.
Speaking of Stephen Grant.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australia News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast.
Dateline, July 18th, 2011.
Grant, will you come out from underneath that suitcase?
Why? I'm busy getting ready to go over, you know, Oshkosh.
I think you put it under that shelf. Look, come out from under there, would you?
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. Not my Vegemite jar. That was my Vegemite jar. Yeah, you owe me. You owe me.
Aw, come on, man. It's only one thing of Vegemite just because you got the mega-sized jar.
Well, I need it for my breakfast. Do you think the Americans will like Vegemite when we get to Oshkosh?
Depends if they put it on our way or if they put it on their jelly way.
Vegemite and jelly.
No, just Vegemite spread on like jelly. It's spectacular to watch them bite into it and realize it's not really a jam.
There you go. Well, what are we going to do? You know, we're so busy packing for Oshkosh. Have we got any news stories this week? Have a look through the list there and see if you can find any.
Oh, the United States have cleared Air New Zealand from any involvement in that cargo freight cartel price fixing thing.
Ah, boring. Next.
Okay. Jetstar's considering the Airbus A320 NEO, the Neo.
Yeah, Neo. No engine ordered.
Oh, thank you, Morpheus.
There we are. I've been saving that one. I've been saving that for you, Webb.
Yeah, right. I wonder if he gets the Morpheus joke. Mm. Anyhow, the RAAF taking a few F-18s to Red Flag in Alaska.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I know. I wonder if they've got them winterized.
Nothing like Aussies coming to America. It must be the season for it.
Yeah. It could be. It could be. Tiger's still grounded. Qantas pilots have voted overwhelmingly for industrial action and engineers and all that. And, there's a carbon tax.
Let me get some paperwork out here. Oh, carbon tax. Nothing makes me madder than that.
Steve. Think happy thoughts. Think happy thoughts.
Look, I don't really want to talk about this. Let's talk about our preparations for Oshkosh. In fact, you know, it's not complete. There's going to be a team of four people. In fact, there's going to be a team of five people there at Oshkosh. I think we should get our American correspondent, our American PCDU Oshkosh team member on the line.
Hello?
David, good morning.
Steve?
Hey.
Do you know what time it is?
Of course I do, my friend. It's midnight.
No. Is there some reason you insisted on waking me up?
I thought we'd ring and talk about Oshkosh.
Did we wake you up before 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning?
Yeah. You're recording the house desk, aren't you?
Oh, no. David, you know we never like to record anything without telling you in advance.
Well, as the North American correspondent, hold on. Let me get my coffee.
Excuse me while I laugh a little bit more in the background about that last comment there, Steve.
I think I'm still dead meat.
Okay, I'm up.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, good morning, Oshkosh. Let's talk about it. Now, I don't know about how the airplane geeks are going to get by because, you know, you'll be so busy working for us, your number one podcast job, that you may not have any chance to work for that other podcast.
Oh boy, am I going to get it at the end of this episode?
Would we make you in trouble? Would we do that?
All right. Yeah.
Frequently.
I think trouble and more trouble are your middle names.
Well, there's no need to worry yet. And I, you should say to Rob Mark, he need not worry about, you know, making all that space available for us because we have to get past the TSA first. They might, you know, they probably won't let us in.
Not with your Vegemite, mate.
No, I'm putting that in your bag, so I'll be fine.
Oh, I'm not your mule.
Hey, how do you reckon it would show up in one of those horrible full-body X-ray scanners with a jar of Vegemite?
Warning, danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. I think basically it would be then shuffled off to a scientific experiment somewhere in the States to figure out what the hell's wrong with you people for eating it.
Well, you know, if you guys can drink Dr. Pepper, we can eat Vegemite. That's what I say.
That brings us to that bet. Unfortunately, I'm going to have a Vegemite sandwich, and Steve is going to drink one of my all-time favorite beverages, Dr. Pepper.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so I do need to try a Dr. Pepper because it's been a very long time since I've even gone near it. We have it over here in Australia, but it's not the proper American stuff. Doesn't have all the extra kick stuff. Carbonated I want to find out which syrup. Is worse, Dr. Pepper or Jeremiah Weed.
Yeah, there we go. So what are we going to do, David? You've been, you know, you've been organizing everything for us, which has been cool. Saves me having to stress about it. What are some of the things we're going to do while we're there?
Well, let's see. We got invited to a barbecue from the Australian contingent. So we will be having some roux on the Barbie, as Mr. Mark would say. I found out that a JetBlue airplane will be arriving with Stephen Turnbaum. That's kind of cool.
Cool.
We're going to experience the great outdoors by camping, sleeping bags and pillows and mosquitoes.
Yeah, well, none of you guys will need mosquito repellents because if American mosquitoes are anything like Australian mosquitoes, well, they'll just zero in on me, so you'll be fine.
We'll have a race then because they really like me as well down here. I'm normally the first one to get slapped. Remember, Steve, at your birthday party, I was being eaten alive and they hadn't come near you yet?
Yeah, and it was cold that night too. Go figure.
Yeah, amazing.
So, and of course, there's going to be airplanes. Lots and lots and lots and lots of airplanes.
Now, an interesting statistic that we've been told is that there's actually going to be more aircraft on the field at Oshkosh than there are on the entire Australian Civil Register.
Wow.
So if that's anywhere near true, that's a lot of airplanes.
Yeah,
that's at least six.
Seven.
Well, it's not only the amount, it's the quality over quantity. Some of the stuff you guys are going to see is going to be pretty awesome. Just for me being a military aviation geek, they announced the aircraft that are showing up for the Centennial of Naval Aviation all week long. And we're going to have Hornets painted as Hellcats, P3s painted as original markings, so engine gray over white. Oh, cool. We're going to have T-6 Texan 2s painted like T-6 Texans. So the whole naval aviation warbird thing will be a dream for me, but that's still not my favorite portion of the air show. My favorite portion of the air show is the classics. There's nothing better than a bright red beach stagger wing sitting next to a travel air.
Yeah, that's I'll go with that.
30s vintage civilian aircraft are... Don't let it out, my true love.
There you go.
Don't tell Shell that.
Now, David, on to much more important things. How much pizza are you and I going to eat while Grant's going off to Rockford on Saturday night? That's what I need to know.
I have a feeling we're going to be eating a lot since that's all you talk about is eating pizza.
Yes, well, of course.
Chicago deep dish.
That's it, yes. We're going to Giordano's. So, you know, if anyone's listening in the Chicago area, you should warn the local Giordano's because I have fond memories from 2007. In fact, I think I'm still digesting it.
Oh, my.
We're going to stock up on pizza because we're probably not going to have time to eat the rest of the week.
Yeah. Oh, you mean I'm finally going to lose some weight? Woohoo! I'll have to schedule any aerobatic flights for the end of the week.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. So Grant and I, in all seriousness, are getting ready and getting packed. We've got our media visas organized. We've got everything else organized. And we've got our sponsors all organized. So we've locked them in so they can't escape now. So we're definitely going.
Yes, that's right. We're officially journalists, according to the U.S. Department of Immigration. So it's awesome.
So I guess the thing we want to put out there too, Grant, is that we will be there and getting around with the Airplane Geeks guys as well. And we will be doing Potapalooza, which will be a blast. So, if you want to see us and catch up, say hi. Well, we might have some PCDU merchandise to give away as well, so that'll be pretty cool.
I think we're going to have lots and lots of good times. I'm looking forward to tonight sitting around the campfire swapping stories about what happened during the day while Vischer edits silently in the moonlight in the tent.
Yeah, the big guy will be hunched over the laptop as always. That's usually the way we roll.
Yeah, and I'll be hunched over the laptop as well doing updates and posting and comments and things like that.
The other cool thing is that this week Playing Crazy Dan Ando crossed the 2-year mark since we released our first show. And the coolest thing about doing all of this is the great friendships we've made with people we've never met. And, the listeners might not know, but David and I have spent many, many hours talking over Skype over the last 2 years, haven't we, mate?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how friendships can develop over the internet.
Yep. So if nothing else, they can have all the air shows and everything else. But in all seriousness, meeting these people that we've never met in real life is going to be just an absolute thrill. So the next time we talk to you, we will be talking to you from up over, not down under.
As the North American correspondent, it's going to be nice to see the rest of my staff from down under.
Awesomeness.
There you go. Okay, well, sorry, folks, we didn't talk about too much news in this week's Australia Desk, but, well, we're just a little bit excited about heading across. So let us know if you're going to be at Oshkosh, playingcrazydownunder@gmail.com or thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and certainly let us know you're there, and we'd love to catch up and meet as many people as we can. So until we're in America, I'm Steve Fisher.
And I'm Grant McCarran.
And he's
David Vanderhoof.
Signing off.
And you know what we should also mention is that their appearance – David and Grant and Steve, their appearance is completely dependent upon their relationship with our dog Simba over those few days prior to Oshkosh, because of course they're staying at Camp Jetwine when they get here to the States. I notice Steve and Grant very cleverly avoided talking about that because they're obviously scared to death to meet this dog.
Well, I mean, Rob, you did give us acceptable losses of one or two, so
I think we just said one.
We figured Boz Schaefer, who's coming across with Steve and Grant, he's an acceptable loss to start off with, and then we'll work our way through the rest.
Yeah, and honestly, if it's as much fun with Steve and Grant here as it was when we all got together at the Smithsonian last month, I'm sure we're all going to have a good time. And everybody is like that up at AirVenture. I mean, it's just one big party.
Hey, Rob, for listeners that are going to be attending, is there some good way that they can find, the geeks and Steve and Grant during the course of the week?
No.
Just sort of catch as catch can, huh?
We will be hidden. We'll be in an underground bunker, actually.
Rob will be sent off to a secondary site to protect the succession of the airplane.
Exactly, in case the rest of the group is taken out.
Let me make it clear to our listeners. Rob Mark sticks out. He is one ugly mother. It'll be easy. And also, he has this constant like dumb look on his face, like, where are we? So you'll see him.
There's going to be retaliation for that statement.
That's fine.
Well,
that's fine.
I mean, Dan just looks like he's about 5. I'm 6'4". Rob looks like Rob. I mean, and this is the dawning of the 21st century. So if you want to meet up with us, you can always just send us an email. We all have iPhones.
Yeah, yeah, and certainly Twitter too. I mean, I
absolutely.
Despite Dan's callous comments, and we managed to catch up despite some of the crummy AT&T service that we had last year, which hopefully will be better. Send us a tweet, send us a text. I guess you'd have to have our phone number to do a text, but certainly DM us on Twitter. I mean, we're going to be all over the ground. So I can't honestly say that we're going to be in any one particular place at any one particular time. But David, maybe you can think about this too. If we do know that we're getting together someplace, we'll just kind of tweet it, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know that I will be at the Airplanesa tweet up. That's Friday night for everybody. I heard tonight that Potapalooza is going to happen on Thursday night. So that's good news.
Well, sure. The My Transponder party is Thursday night. So I think they're going to do it at the My Transponder thing or something, right?
Yeah. So, and we'll be around. You'll see us. I mean, just find the guys with the funny accents and they'll know where the rest of us are.
Okay. And the My Transponder party is at the Sennheiser booth. I think it starts at 6:30 or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
6:30 or 7 o'clock on Thursday night. So.
Yep.
And if we owe you money,
we're not there.
We're not there.
Okay. All right. Let's listen to Peter Johnson across the pond.
Aviation interview.
Today, I'm joined by Gareth Stringer, Deputy Editor of Global Aviation Resource, to talk about the hangar. Gareth, welcome back to Across the Pond.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Peter. How are you?
Yes, not too bad, not too bad. Thanks good. For joining us again. Gareth, can you tell us what the hangar is and what the thinking was behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I guess, something that we've been pondering for quite a long time. I think the one thing we realised, Peter, is that whilst we have lots of fantastic content that we push from all over the world on Global Aviation Resource, we didn't really have a means of engaging very directly with our audience. As you'll well know, and you know, things like podcasts and such like, it's all about social media and interaction and talking to each other. So that was the thinking behind it. But we knew that we didn't want to do just a forum.
Yeah.
And also in the UK, we do have quite a few very popular aviation forums, and there seemed little point, to be honest, in just doing another one.
Right.
So we essentially came up with a social network, which most people immediately think of the film and think of Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's essentially how we kind of think of it. It's like Facebook, but it is for aviation enthusiasts.
Yeah, I got to say, there's just always something to see. There's always something to read. There's always something new on there. I've really found it quite exciting, actually.
That's brilliant. And I think you've just said one of the key words there, which is read, actually, because it's very easy for people to post their photographs, whether they use, you know, Photo Bucket or Flickr or stick them on a forum or whatever. What we really wanted the hangar to do, and we hoped it would do, would be to encourage people to blog.
Yeah.
And yes, post their pictures, but tell some of the story. You know, tell us what did you do on your day out, wherever it was, you know,
yeah,
doing a show or whatever. And people seem to have really embraced that. And there's a lot of people on there, if you go through the content, who the first line says, "This is the first time I've written a blog."
Yeah, I have seen that a few times.
And you just think, well, that's brilliant. That's exactly what we wanted to do. And without really telling anybody, people seem to get it, which is fantastic. Yeah.
So it's been going for a few months now. Who are the main users of the hangar? Who are you seeing come into the forums and things like that?
It's a really good question. And to be perfectly honest, we have got a really very broad spectrum of people on there. There's some youngsters on there who clearly have aviation aspirations, whether they want to fly or whatever it might be. Also, there's probably a few more old cronies like my good self who've been maybe around the block a few times.
Oh, I don't think so.
But, you know, photographers, writers, spotters, dare I say the word, you know, people from all over, and not just the UK either, which is fantastic. There's some members in the States particularly posting some fantastic content, and that's brilliant, because that's not the sort of thing that we, you know, we always readily get to see. So,
yeah.
Really does cover a wide range, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so with that sort of content and with it now being up and going, and how many users have you got now?
Got over 500 users now, and we're just into our third month, and that, you know, this hasn't been advertised anywhere. This is just growing organically. This probably, actually, for Airplane Geeks, is probably the first really sort of piece of PR that we've done, if you like. So we're really happy with that. And it's very easy to share content on there and to invite your friends and all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, we're really happy with it.
So where does it go from here then, Gareth? Is there going to be an app, or is that the sort of route you plan to see it going?
I think you probably hit the nail on the head, Peter. I think it's going to take some time. I think you obviously need a sort of a real sort of weight of numbers behind it to make something like that worthwhile. But I would say an app is an obvious way to go at some point. And also the exciting thing is that we haven't really scratched even the surface of what the hangar itself is capable of doing.
Right.
And when we start to, when the numbers, you know, continue to grow and everybody gets used to it, because it's still early days, I think people should look out for some fairly exciting developments.
Yeah. And what sort of content seems to be the main topic areas? I mean, you know, it's so broad. Are you seeing any particular themes or anything like that coming up?
That again is a very good question, and without wishing to sound like a cop out, I'm not sure there's anything that's particularly dominant. Maybe air shows. I mean, air shows, as you know from our previous discussion, are very, very big here in the UK and elsewhere. But equally, the other areas that seem to be discussed a lot are people looking for some help with their photography, for example.
Yeah.
That seems to be a very popular area, whether it's actually taking pictures or editing and such like. And the other areas, we've got quite a few people on there who are learning to fly,
or have
learned to fly and are telling people, you know, some of the story about how they learned to fly and what you have to do. And there's a couple of people blogging who are en route to getting their commercial licenses, and that's all fascinating stuff.
All right. Well, that's really, really good. We'll have to try and see if we can draw some more of our listeners to the site itself. Gareth, I can't really let you go without asking about the Royal Navy Air Show at Yeovil, which was a little over a week ago now. Can you tell us what some of the highlights were?
Oh, it was fantastic, Peter. I have to say, as I said in my review for Global Aviation Resource, probably a candidate for Show of the Year, but...
Yeah.
Crikey, where to start? Polish Air Force MiG-29 in the final.
I know, that really did look quite impressive.
Very, very impressive. You know, we don't get to see them as much as we used to. Bizarre as that actually sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
French Navy bought a Rafale and a Super Eton d'Arb and did a sort of mock airfield attack stroke roll demonstration. Again, very, very impressive.
Yeah.
And the Overton always finishes with what's called the Commando Assault, which the centrepiece of which is the Commando Helicopter Force. They're jungly sea kings, but they have Royal Marine Commandos on the ground and Lynx and air support from Hawks and loads of pyrotechnics. And it was a show that really did have a bit of everything.
And is there anything on Planes TV?
Yes, there is. There's a highlights video up on Planes TV, actually, which just came up a couple of days ago. And also, Planes TV will be doing the DVD and the Blu-ray. And I'm pretty sure the whole show will be available on planestv.com for people to stream as well. If you weren't there, and particularly maybe if you're listening from outside of the UK, I would say it's well worth a watch, because it really was a bit of everything and some great stuff.
Right, well, I'm off to watch Planes TV then. before I leave you, Gareth, thanks very much for joining us again. Where can we find you online?
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure, Peter. The Hangar is at thehangar.tv, and that's hangar.tv. And Global Aviation Resource, just as a reminder, is www.globalaviationresource.com. Please come and take a look.
And can we also find you on Twitter?
Oh, you can. Yes, I'm at Gareth_Stringer, and you can find Gar, as we call it, at GAviationR.
Gareth, thanks very much for joining us again.
It's an absolute pleasure, Peter. Good to speak to you again.
You can find Peter Johnson on Twitter at NascotHornet and at alphatangopapa.blogspot.com.
This is Peter Johnson, reporting for the Airplane Geeks from across the pond.
Thanks, Peter, for that. It's an interesting site, worth checking out.
Yeah, you know what they caught me napping on was when I signed up to, you know, to register at the hangar, it asks a question at the bottom, and I didn't know the answer, and it wasn't a personal question. It was actually a sort of an aircraft history question, and I thought, oh my God, where's David? I don't know what to do.
You couldn't answer it.
I finally figured it out, but you had to have the answer in order to register. So they don't want just any pretty face.
I see. You got to have some knowledge, huh?
And they're not easy questions.
No. I've never seen a site that did that. That's actually pretty interesting.
Wow.
It's one way to prevent spam, because if you don't know what the thrust ratio is of a certain General Electric engine, it's easily found on Google. But still, it was like, you're really asking me this?
Well, you know, Dan gave Peter a homework assignment last time. I don't know. Do you remember that, Dan?
No.
Remember, it was about, you asked if any airlines had been shut down by the
European, CAA?
The CAA.
Yeah.
And Peter provided a quick answer to that. So here's Peter's homework.
I'm just following up on my homework exercise from last week. I don't think there has been any UK airline that's ever been shut down by the CAA. As you know, us Brits love following procedures, and where there's a procedure, we'll follow it. So anyone who's broken one just isn't British, really. Secondly, to respond to an email from, I think it's Andy Brown, who emailed the show to ask us to look at the app for Duxford Air Show. Well, I've had a look at it. I've seen what it can do. It looks pretty good. Got some great photography on there, some live information. I did find it a little bit slow, though, but overall, pretty good app. So that's me, Peter. I've done my homework this week. Hope everyone else has.
Here's my other homework for Peter.
There's more?
Yeah. Why is it that for British people, consonants at the beginning of words do not exist? I'm just wondering.
Okay. Well, another thing we talked about last time was weight and balance. And Rob, you were going to take a look at that. But we also had some feedback from some of our listeners. There was a tweet I saw from AK Flyboy. He said, granted, the SF-340 isn't a 737, but when we are hand-flying, we can easily feel when the flight attendant is walking the aisle.
There is some great feedback on Facebook as well about doing weight and balance on the 737, just to prove that it does exist, which is all I want to do. So thank you, Facebook people.
And Rob, have you got anything to add to this conversation?
I actually did try to do a little digging here, and the opportunity to catch up with somebody that's flying the 800 model 737 is a little limited. But one thing I did do is I did talk to a pilot for a company that will soon have 737-800s. They've been through some of the training, and they did say that it is going to have some restrictions on it in certain situations, certain weight situations, or certain temperature situations, that it may have to offload passengers or you know, basically shut some seats down. So I think that and that might probably have something to do with the fact that the 800 is so long, and you know, it doesn't take much at the front or the back to throw it out of balance if the fuel load is a little special. But you know, as far as the actual numbers, I was not able to do them, except again to research it and find out from a couple of pilots that, yeah, there definitely are some situations where there are going to be some seats blocked.
Yeah, well, and honestly, weight and balance kind of, there are so many factors. I mean, you have passengers and bags, but also as Rob kind of alluded to, basic hot and high situations, you're gonna start running into some issues.
I didn't allude to that.
Well,
I said hot and high.
Well, fine. The hotter
and
higher.
I said fuel too. So it wasn't just weight, and it wasn't just baggage.
No, sorry. I was
trying
to agree with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is making my evening. You just wind up the two and let them go.
I'm sorry for agreeing with you. God.
Oh, were you agreeing? I'm sorry. Yes. Okay, never mind.
So
see, it's like being the middle child. See, you get the older
that's how, this is how people are going to find us at Oshkosh. They're going to hear all this noise and go, what the hell are those two guys arguing about over there?
But anyway, so for example, you really would, so an airport like Denver in the summer, you will have a very long takeoff run. However, Denver has incredibly long runways, so it's not as much of an issue. But if you're dealing with a short runway, or if it's in the winter and you're doing a transcon against the headwinds, I mean, you could either lighten your load or you could divert en route. And also, the other issue is not all aircraft, like let's say in this case the 737-800, are created equal. I mean, for example. I think on the 800 there are two or three different versions. I think two versions of the CFM56 that are available on that model. So, with different thrust settings, so that would affect your takeoff performance as well. Obviously, and then you have the whole issue of does it have winglets and da 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 da. And yeah,
we also had a listener from Surrey, Dave, who he sent in a theory concerning Ryanair's. Balancing with empty seat rows and so forth. And Dave says, could these have been people who paid to put their bags in the hold and paid for priority boarding and to use the toilets, but forgot to put a tick in the box to confirm that passengers were also required with this booking? Thanks to Dave for that.
Hey, can we tell anybody that funny joke? Who was the listener that sent us that joke about, O'Leary goes into the bar and it was a.
Oh, that's coming up, but we had that's in our listener mail segment. Shall
oh, is it?
We, shall
okay,
we start the listener
sure
mail
we were,
segment? We
can, oh, I think that's a great one.
Dude, really? We have that now. Are you holding? Please tell me that's a soundboard effect and not an actual bell that you now are in possession of.
No, I am not. I am not physically ringing a bell. On to the listener mail. David Abbey sent us a link to a USA Today article. Will the A380 fly for U.S. airlines?
No.
And so you think not, Dana? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I really don't see that happening for a U.S. carrier at any point in time.
Any particular reason?
Well, I mean, if you look at it and if you look at U.S. based airlines for international travel. The only two airlines to have even a 747 operating at this point in time are United as well as Delta. And both of those fleets are relatively small compared to the other aircraft types in terms of the 777, 76, or even in some cases the A330 or on the really small end, the 75. So I just don't think there's really any interest in that gauge, and lately, if anything, the trend transatlantically has been lately smaller is beautiful. And yeah. The other thing you have to realize is a lot of the A380 routes. So basically, what we have going, and my theory isn't absolutely perfect here because it doesn't always work. But you have some of the major airlines that are operating the A380 at this point: Lufthansa and Air France. They are JV'd with their American SkyTeam or Star Alliance. Mm-hmm. So at this point, you have an airline like Lufthansa sending the A380 to San Francisco, which is from Frankfurt, which is already a United hub. You do have some aspects of that there, but lately on the I think more importantly is just U.S. airlines do not seem to be all that interested in very large aircraft at this point in time.
Okay.
So no New York to LAX, huh? A380.
No. I mean, look. I mean, right now the
just
the largest...
think of all the people they could sandwich in for that 6-hour flight.
Well, right now I think the largest airplane on that route is the American 767-200. So there, but then on that route even, which is a very busy route, you have the 76 largest, but you have United operating the 75, but that's in a very not dense premium configuration. Delta's doing the 75, and then you got JetBlue doing the 320, and then Virgin doing the 320 family as well. So it just seems there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of interest at this point, and I really don't think there will be, especially when you think about it. When United, and granted, who knows what will happen when United now that United's merged, but at the time United was calling the A350-900 at 747 replacement, I believe. And that's a significant, in my opinion, decrease in gauge. So just my thoughts.
Okay.
Anyway.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Nicely done, Dan. We received a report on a recent flight experience from Ben in England. And it's actually a fantastic report. It's got some really interesting photographs included. But let me just paraphrase it a little bit because it's rather long. So the short version is that his wife won a competition for a 30-minute flight experience in a light aircraft. Now, Ben's been flying before. He used to be a member of the ATC, the Air Training Corps in the UK. So he was pretty excited about this this little flight that his wife won. So he drove 3 hours to the airfield, and as they pulled into the car park, he spotted a beautiful yellow and silver tiger moth. So that was kind of a nice way to start. You also could see a pair of robins, which is what the flight experience was actually going to use. So he boards the airplane. He's on the left-hand side. His instructor's on the right-hand seat. And as they started to taxi out at the end of the grass strip, he could hear some chatter over the radio. And he heard a call sign, which was Lancaster 342. And it turns out this belonged to an actual Avro Lancaster, which was approaching the airspace. So Ben writes, the tower was requesting a flyby from the Lancaster pilot, but there was a small problem, which was that Ben and his little flight were due to take off, and that would coincide with the Lancaster if it was going to do a flyby. So the pilot proceeded to ask Ben the simplest question of my life, he says, do you mind if we hold so the Lancaster can do a flyby of the airfield? Well, you know what Ben said, obviously, of course. So the pilot popped the canopy open so that they could hear the sound of the Merlin engines, the four Merlin engines from this Lancaster. He's got some really, really fantastic photos of this plane coming by. He says the Lancaster approached from the rear and practically flew right overhead. It was a wonderful view. So Ben says that if my knowledge is correct, I believe that there are only two remaining flying Lancasters currently in existence, one in Canada and this one, which belongs to the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight. And he says maybe David can confirm that. He'd actually seen this aircraft while he was in the Air Cadets previously. So after the Lancaster had left the airspace, the pilot handed over control to Ben. And Ben actually performed several turns, being careful to avoid what he calls the nutters without engines, which is the gliders, and also to avoid the nutters who jump out of perfectly good aircraft, and those were the parachutists. And Ben finishes up saying, all in all, a fantastic experience. Anyone who's only flown commercial doesn't know what they are missing out on if you have never flown or been a passenger in a light aircraft. He highly recommends it. So thanks to Ben for sending that really great report and the accompanying photos. That Lancaster looks pretty impressive. I can just imagine that thing flying overhead.
Four Merlins flying in formation.
Nothing like it.
And he's right. There's only two. And most people have actually seen the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight Lancaster. Anybody who watched the latest wedding that occurred over Buckingham Palace
right,
and saw the flyover, the four-engine bomber that flew over the palace, that was the airplane he saw.
Cool. All right. We also got a voicemail from our listener, Stephen Thornblum, who I understand is going to be at Oshkosh.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's 2:58 in the morning. It's Stephen out here on my way to work. I talked to Dan only about 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago. Just listening to the new podcast with Bryce, and the subject of the TSA just came up. And well, let's just say I'm going to agree with you guys or some of the readers. But I would like to note that also the wonderful folks at the TSA have so little on their hands, at least let's just say in a certain area, that they come out two at a time, stand around and watch bags be loaded into bag carts while there are four cameras watching the bag room, which are watched over by airport security. And if they really get bored, they come over, pretend to talk to you, but really just want to check your badge 3 times a day within 5 hours. Makes no sense to me, but I guess somebody's got to come up with something, just like the new security measure that they want to have. Anyway, that's about it. Back to the podcast. Have a good one.
Does this guy ever sleep?
I know. His working hours are, unbelievable.
Oh, my Lord. I can't. Steven, I can't imagine your life.
He'll probably be up running around the campground at Oshkosh at 3 in the morning or something while everybody else is trying to sleep. And here's another voicemail from a listener.
Hey, guys. This is Steven calling in. Just listening to the latest podcast, and I thought it was kind of funny that you mentioned the price of that new biofuel that's been touted for $2.90 a gallon. I was just listening to another podcast from Terra News Network today, and they're talking about the DOT statistic that just came out showing that the price that airlines actually paid for jet fuel gone up from $2.32 a gallon last May to $3.03 a gallon this May. So it's nowhere near the $7 LaGuardia price that's posted on AirNav or other places. So $2.90 versus $3 a gallon doesn't seem really like that much of a difference. So just seems more of a PR game than anything else there. And just in case you're curious, DOT says that U.S. airlines burned through 1.4 billion gallons of fuel in May. So that's quite a chunk of change. The other comment I had, you guys were talking about the shutting down of the airlines, and happens actually all the time in Part 135 operations, the charter operations. The latest one is, again, this week, the Bimini Island Air was shut down. The operation certificate got revoked because they supposedly operated some flights as a scheduled airline to Bahamas, and they were not supposed to do that. So maybe not U.S. Airlines, but in the charter world, FAA loves to revoke certificates once in a while. So that's really not that uncommon. So just want to leave a couple of comments. Thanks for a great podcast. Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you for that feedback.
I'm actually glad we got that voicemail, because when I saw the DOT data come out this week, I was like, ha, Rob. And our listener took care of it for me. But what was interesting that I believe that price for May 2011 is actually the highest we've seen since October 08. So, and
that's the peak
for now. And,
for now,
ha, Dan.
Well, no.
I was talking retail in New York. Not I believe I did mention that airlines pay considerably less than that price.
Yes, but regardless, your argument fell apart completely, and I am victorious.
Vindicated. All right.
Winning, to quote Charlie Sheen.
We also got an email from David Spayers. He is a pilot from Peru, and he mentions that he's going to be up in Oshkosh this year. Looks forward to seeing everyone. So hopefully make a connection there. He says his day job is flying in Peru with a missionary organization. His daily driver is a Cessna 206, but he enjoys hearing about the big iron that we talk about on the show. So thanks to David for that. Hopefully the guys will be able to make contact. Oh, David's got a blog too, www.davidspayers.blogspot.com. That's DavidSpeyers. So have a look at that.
A really cool blog, by the way.
Great. We also got a note from William. William says, when I was born, my dad was a flight engineer on both the B-29 and the KC-97. He was in the 303 squadron, part of the 303 bomb wing. He was trying to find out more about the aircraft and the squadron and was looking for any ideas where to search. I put in a couple. I just searched Google for 303 Squadron and Bomb Wing. I found some sources at strategicaircommand.com and also over at 303rdbg.com. David, I don't know if you have any sort of magic tips or suggestions for how folks can, you know, kind of answer questions like this on their own.
Usually airplane, comma, squadron.
Just search it.
Boolean searches. That's how I handle everything. Old school. Remember subject searches, and just normally just do the squadron and the comma and the aircraft or dates or times. Try to do more than one item per search is the best thing to do. So in this case, talk about B-29, 303rd Bomb Squadron. So that way you're not searching every website that has B-29 and
right.
bra sizes of B-29s, etc.
Okay. Thanks, David. We also got a note from Luke in Australia, and he sent along a YouTube video. This is about our conversation that Ansett was the only airline to operate three crew in the 767. And he's got a link to a YouTube video that shows one of these aircraft in operation back in 1987. So thanks to Luke for that. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. And next up from Nick. Now, Rob, this is what you were asking about before. This is the Michael O'Leary joke.
Yes, yes, good.
So let's see if we can, how well we can do this. It's here's how it goes. Michael O'Leary goes into a well-known Dublin pub, the Harp, and asks for a pint of Guinness. "That will be €1, please," says the barman. "That's a very low price," replies O'Leary. "I approve. Now, before I pour it, would you like a glass with that, sir?" asks the barman. "Of course," says O'Leary. "How else would I drink it?" "No problem," says the barman. "That'll be €4 for the glass, €1 for the Guinness, and a €2 Guinness pumping charge. Now, would you like to stand at the bar or and drink it or sit down?" "It's €1 to stand, €2 to sit." Stand, replies O'Leary. "Grand. Now, how about crisps, nuts, paninis, lotto tickets, or perhaps some celebrity-endorsed fragrance to go with your pint?" "Just give me the pint," screams O'Leary. "I only came here for the pint." Okay, let's just review your order. €1 for the Guinness, €4 for the glass. €2 for the Guinness pumping charge, €1 to stand, and that's €8 so far, please. How about pre-booking a taxi home?" "Ah," screams O'Leary in desperation. "Okay, sir, I understand your frustration," says the barman, "but we have to do all this to keep the price of our Guinness at €1. People demand good value from us. Do you know some pubs are charging as much as €4 for a pint of Guinness?" "I know, it's terrible the way some other pubs behave, ripping off customers like that. Anyways, how much do I owe you?" "That's €8, replies the barman. What card would you like to pay with?" It's a good joke. So thanks to Nick for that. Another thing that Nick mentioned also is that after our episode on the ICE pilots, he says he watches that show religiously now. And after all of our conversations about gliding, he's going for his first glider flight this coming weekend for the first time. So I'm glad Nick has sort of expanded his horizons as a result of this podcast. Next up, Thromby Air. Do you guys watch follow Thromby Air, thrombyair.com? This guy is hysterical. So from Thromby Air, we have "Hi to all airplane geeks. As I'm sure you know, your underpaid Ausdesk slaves, Steve and Grant, are heading to Oshkosh. They have set up a page on Plane Crazy Down Under website that outlines their plans for Oshkosh, which include 3 podcasts of their own, the hugely popular Potapalooza get-together, and hopefully meeting as many listeners as possible. As with all true airplane geeks, they always give generously of their own time and always provide great and refreshing aviation content. For them, however, the inconveniently round Earth combined with their ruinous Ausdesk contract means that they are often recording in the middle of the night. Their trip to Oshkosh means that, for once, they can record with the airplane geeks during the hours of daylight. They are a little shy about asking for donations, but they shouldn't be. Obviously, a trip from Australia to Oshkosh is a huge undertaking. They have some fabulous sponsors, and this trip would not be possible without their help. But it is a long way from Melbourne to Wisconsin, and they could probably use some extra soda pop money when they arrive. They have set up a page on their website that outlines their plans for the trip and an invitation to any listeners who want to help out. Despite their strange accents and continual insistence that it's what's down under that counts, I would encourage anyone who has enjoyed Stephen Grant's Ausdesk segments to give them a hand. Pop over to the website, plaincrazydownunder.com, and hit the donate button. Even a dollar or two will help. Let's throw these guys a bone and make their trip run like a greased pig. Maybe then they'll be able to come and play next year too. So, and that's from the CEO of Thromby Air, of course, Robert E. Coli. Finally, we got a question from Angelo. Angela says, "I hope that I am not just another annoying email in your inbox, so I just wanted to ask a few questions. 1, Boeing or Airbus. 2, Embraer or Bombardier. And 3, 707-320 or 707-420. So let's do a quick roundtable. Number 1, Boeing or Airbus?
How are we on time? Are we almost over time?
Yes, but this is the last one.
Then you're being really annoying.
Okay, Rob, Boeing or Airbus?
You know, I would steal a page from David, actually, and I feel bad that somebody didn't say either Lockheed or Douglas, because...
So you're saying neither?
Well, he didn't give us a time frame.
You're making it too hard. Just quick, right off the top of your head. Pick one.
Airbus!
Okay. Dan...
It depends.
Oh,
yeah, see?
No, it doesn't.
See,
depend.
It's not just...
No, because, for example...
Where's
like,
the spontaneity here?
No, because, I prefer an A320 to a 737 any day. Well, not any day, but generally, because the cabin on the A320 is 7 inches wider. But even though it's... But, you know, there's so many different Boeing and Airbus types, it's tough.
Okay. All right, David... You got to play
I'm going to go with my original answer, Lockheed.
Okay. My answer is Airbus, just simply because they're stealing the show in terms of in the press, even though it may not be the long-term best strategy. So that's my answer on that. Okay, now we got to do Embraer or Bombardier.
Embraer.
Okay. Dan?
I'm going to preface this by saying I have yet to fly on a CRJ 700 or 900, but I'm going to go with Embraer, and here's why. I love the E-170 and the E-190. I flown on the 175 as well, but I also love on the ERJ how there's the on the left side of the aircraft, there's the magical seat that is both a window and an aisle.
Yes. All right, David, which is it? Embraer or Bombardier?
I'll have to go with Bombardier because they sucked up one of the greatest companies of all time, Lear.
Okay, cool. Well, that's a good reason.
And I thought you were going to say de Havilland.
Well, that too, but...
Oh, that reminds me. I have yet to fly in any in the Dash 8 family, so I do not know enough to promptly answer the question, though I do love Embraer products.
Go fly a Q400. It's really... It is quite an airplane. Well,
no, not the Q. I've heard the Q is compared to the Dash much better because there's some kind of noise suppression system on the Q.
Yeah, that's why it's Q.
All right, we've got the third one now. 707-320 or 707-420?
David!
I know. I defer to David on this one.
I plead youth to this question.
All right, David, what can you tell us about these two?
One's bigger than the other.
Which one's bigger? The 420.
The 420. But then again, I defer to a 707-335B, which is commonly known as a VC-37B, which is commonly known in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s as Air Force One.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, I think that's it for listener mail. I think that's it for this episode. We want to thank you all for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. Our guest this episode was Brian Lusk. He's the corporate historian for Southwest Airlines. As always, we'd like to thank Steve Fisher and Grant McCarron from the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast for their Australia Desk report.
Yeah, but we can't, right?
We can.
Well, I was thinking about this. Why is it always Steve? Why is Steve always get to go first?
We'd like to thank Grant McCarron and Steve Fisher. Does that
better? There we go. Okay. That is better.
And this one's easier because there's only one. And that, of course, is Peter Johnson for his Across the Pond segment covering European aviation. You can find Peter at alphatangopapa.blogspot.com. All right, let's tell folks where they can find us online. Rob Mark, we'll start with you.
Well, let's see. You can certainly find us at jetwine.com and jetwine on Twitter and comavia at our company site. But certainly... next week at Air Venture with all the rest of the geeks.
That's right. David Vanderhoof, how about you?
You can find me on my blog at whatjustflewby.com. You can find me hanging out on Plane Crazy Down Under. You can find me on Twitter at DM Vanderhoof. And to paraphrase the old Jewish celebratory statement, next week in Oshkosh.
Okay. And Dan Webb, where do people find you?
You can find my blog at thingsinthesky.com. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Webbage. And actually, a lot of a decent amount of listeners have actually been adding me on Google Plus, which I still have done nothing with. But thank you for adding me, I guess.
Yeah, very good.
I will figure out how to use Google Plus at some point.
We all will. And I'm Max Flight. You can find me at the 30,000feet.com aviation directory. On Twitter, I'm Max Flight.
Now, Max, you need to say, and where else can they find you?
Well, podcastingpassion.com, of course.
And if you folks haven't listened to it yet, go out and hunt it down in iTunes. It's about the making of podcasting, but it's really good.
Oh, you're too kind, David.
And remember, guys, you can also occasionally find Rob Mark on Fox News.
That's right.
with a new tie each time.
I got to say, last time you were on there, I liked the tie choice. Big improvement. I think you went with the red tie then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look sharp.
See, we can have a rate Rob's tie contest every time he's on Fox. Well, be sure to follow Airplane Geeks on Twitter and Facebook. You can find show notes at airplanegeeks.com. That'll contain links to all the sites we mentioned on this podcast. This was episode 156. We're also on Stitcher.com, where you can stream this podcast to your mobile phone. If you'd like to send us email, the address is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And we also have our listener line, where you can leave us an audio message.
If you'd like to call the Airplane Geeks, call 361-GEEKS-01.
Thank you, David.
Oh, I thought that was Binet.
Not this week. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening. I just want to try. I've never done this in the hundred something episodes I've been on, so I just want to give it a shot. Okay, everyone, good, hydrated. I'm gonna take that as you're good. Okay. Dan, you've been dreaming for this your whole life.
Are you through yet, Dan?
I'm gonna do this. Shut up, Rob. God. Anyway.
Brian, hello. Don't listen to this.
I'm just going to go ahead and move the podcast forward. Hello, an episode... damn it.
Okay.
Hello, and welcome to episode 156 of the Airplane Geeks podcast, the show where we talk aviation. I thought Weight and Balance was the official new Airplane Geeks diet plan. Ba-da-pooch! Thank you. My echoes again.
Yeah, your echo's back.
You know what, Dan? The echoes are in your head.
How do you say this guy's name? Pompeo?
The Republican congressman?
Max, yeah. Just follow my method and just don't really
don't even
care.
Ask.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
a Republican congressman from Wichita, or from...
Yeah, Mike.
Letters. We get letters.
Letters.
We get your letters.
All right, let me open up the listener mail here. Let's see.
Oh, can we have a sound effect like oh, and like be like a bag and all the envelopes are coming? It'd be gimmicky because it's funny because it's email. So we don't have a bag of letters, but it'd be funny.
It would be funny, but
Mr. Postman, look and see. Oh, yeah. Is there an email for me, Mr. Postman?
Oh, God. Okay.